Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, March the 14th, 2024. It is currently 9:27 a.m. Central Time, and I'm coming to you live from the Theology Central studio, located right here in Abilene, Texas. Now, what I refer to as the Theology Central studio is really just kind of, well, it's the upstairs bedroom. I guess you could call it a bedroom. This has been used for so many things. It has been a bedroom. It's been a homeschool classroom. It's now a studio, but it's located here in my home, right? If I walk down the stairs of this studio and I open the door, I'm literally walking into the kitchen of my home, right? So this studio is in my home. And in this home, well, is where I have lived now for I don't even remember how many years now. It seems like for a very long time. And you may know this, you may not know this. This home, the mortgage, has been paid for by my church. Out of 23 plus years of ministry, the most money I have ever made as a pastor, the max amount of money I have ever made in 23 years of being a full-time pastor, that's teaching Sunday school, that's teaching Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. Hour after hour of teaching, 23 years, doing things like premarital counseling, marrying people, all the different things that I have done as a pastor, all the things I have done. 23 years, the max amount of money I have ever made is simply they have paid the house payment. So that's about $12,000 in a year is the max amount I have ever made as a pastor. And it deals directly with my home. They make the house payment. That's what they do. They make the house payment. The church has made the house payment. And they haven't even done that. I mean, for the first, I don't even know how many years, I didn't take a dime from the church, not even a dime. And even when the church was growing, I didn't take anything. I didn't take any payment or anything. And then the church wanted to do something. So then we agreed upon making the house payment. And that's what they have done for now. I don't know. It's been 10 years, I think. 11 years, 12 years. I don't know. I'd have to try to figure it out. It's numbers. I would get it all wrong. So it's about $1,000 a month for the mortgage payment, $1,100 something. Right. And so I think it's $1,100 something. And we just take $1,000. I think that's all we take. And then we pay the what's over that. So basically it's $12,000 in a year is what is paid. And that's the max I've ever made. But it deals directly with this house. It deals directly with my home. And I understand how important that is as a pastor. Look, if they didn't make my house payment, then that's going to be a massive financial situation for me, a major financial situation for me. So I'm eternally grateful for it. I will forever be grateful for it because it's been such a huge blessing and a huge help. In fact, this podcast wouldn't exist without that, right? Because without that, I would have to have a job and then I would be a pastor, have a job, and then try to do the podcast. I've been there. I've done that. And oh man, I don't think I could ever do that again. So I'm very grateful for it. And I want to give full transparency to that, right? Because we're getting ready to talk about something, well, about pastors' parsonages, right? Pastors' parsonage. Well, the parsonage, I don't know if your church refers to it as that, but typically sometimes the church will own a home, and that's where if a pastor gets a job there, they get to live there. That's the parsonage. There was a brief time in my Christian life, I was a teenager. I was finishing up high school. My whole thing is I was going to go into ministry. And because of my family situation got really bad, there was a parsonage for the First Baptist Church in Tuscola, Texas. It was located literally right next to the church. Nobody was living in it. It was vacant. And so they let me live in it. And so I got to live there for a short amount of time. So I know about a church having a parsonage, and I know how much of a blessing that can be. I remember as a teenager, I was with my first pastor. Now, I think he was trying to convince himself that what he was doing was the right thing, because he was about to just abandon our church in Tuscola and basically say peace out, and he was going to move to another church. And I remember being with him as he was showing me the church. It was obviously bigger. It was obviously nicer than the little small church in the middle of nowhere, Texas, Tuscola, Texas. But he also showed me the parsonage, and it was, you know, 10 times nicer than the parsonage in Tuscola. So I've been around this discussion. Well, the Christian Post yesterday posted an article about pastors and their parsonages. And specifically, they posted an article about what's known as the pastor's parsonage exemption. Now, I didn't even know this existed. I didn't even know this existed in any way, shape, or form. And full transparency, the reason I didn't know this existed is in a roundabout way, I get this benefit, but not because I claim a pastor's parsonage exemption or anything along those lines, because I didn't even know it existed. I get this benefit because I'm a disabled vet. That's why I get this exemption. I didn't know this existed. And you can tell me what you whether you think this is a good thing, it's a bad thing. The way this article is written, I think most people are going to see this going, that's absolutely not right. This is uncalled for and something needs to be done. And you can tell me what you think. Are you ready for this? Here's the article. Pastor's parsonage exemption. What would tele-evangelists pay if their mansions weren't tax exempt? So should a pastor's mansion be tax exempt? Should a pastor's mansion be tax exempt? Now, the first thing you may say, well, wait a minute. Should a pastor own a mansion? So this is a very important question. Now you, the church member, forget pastors, forget the people standing behind pulpits, forget us, forget anyone in ministry, forget the Christian podcaster, forget that. Just you sitting in the pew. How nice of a home should a pastor own? And at what point does it become wrong? Is there a line? Can a pastor own a home that's worth $500,000? Can he own a home that's worth $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $900,000? Now what I have seen is if you don't like their theology, if you don't like what they preach, then you're always like, I can't believe they live in that. And then you use it to criticize them. We saw this controversy erupt over John MacArthur and the homes he owns. And I believe he owns three, according to the report. I'd have to go verify that. But I believe it was three homes. Now, if you look at those three homes, is it wrong for him to own these three homes? And they are very, 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 very nice. The Roy's report did an entire article about it. And MacArthur supporters were like, how dare you? He has worked hard. He has served faithful in ministry for all of these years. He has published books. He's, you know, the head of the Master Seminary. He's the head of Grace Community Church. And then he does the radio program. How dare you? He can have as many homes as he wants. Who are you to criticize him? Now, people who didn't like MacArthur was like, oh, wait a minute. This looks carnal. This looks fleshly. This looks worldly. So sometimes they'd go, it's like, if you don't like the pastor, they could live in a tent. You'd be like, well, that's a nicer tent than other people have. And if you love the pastor, you're like, he can have 17 homes, all worth $50 million apiece, and it's perfectly okay. And it should not work that way. And I think the problem is, the reason no one can give a definitive answer is I don't know if there is a definitive answer. I mean, you could try to argue, well, Jesus had no place to lay his head, so a pastor shouldn't even own a home. I mean, you could try to do something and go all super spiritual like that. And some pastors don't own a home. They just live in the church parsonage. Now, if it's the church parsonage, the church owns it. So if the church owns it and the pastor lives in it, well, then if it belongs to the church, then then is it, do you blame the pastor for that, or do you blame the church for purchasing such an, you know, an a luxurious mansion? Like how do you understand that? Like where, as you, for those sitting in the pew, where do you draw the line? Now, here's the story. So here's the story. Again, the headline is, Pastor's Parsonage Exemption. What would televangelists pay if their mansions weren't tax exempt? And then again, this was published Wednesday, March the 13th. This is how the story begins, all right? An Inside Edition recently investigated the topic of tax-exempt parsonages. Now, I believe Inside Edition, they have a YouTube channel. I have not looked this up. And I believe they have a video report of this. And they show there's four televangelists, and it's a picture of them. And then right with their picture is a picture of their mansions. And these things are gigantic. These things are nice. All right, but here we go. Inside Edition recently investigated the topic of tax-exempt parsonages. The news report featured drone footage and pictures of some of America's largest church-owned mansions. Investigative reporter attempted to interview televangelist Jesse DePlantis regarding his residence, but he refused to answer questions. Associate pastor and political scientist Ryan Burge told Inside Edition, if you have a multi-million dollar house, your property tax bill could be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. But if it's classified as a parsonage, now you don't have to pay property tax on that home. That $50,000 could pay the salary of an elementary school teacher in your local public school. So how they're framing this, or at least how Inside Edition is framing it, is, hey, here's these pastors. They live in this community. If they were paying property tax, that'd be like $50,000. So they're actually robbing from the community. So they're really framing it in a very negative light. Now, the same thing could be said about me. So full transparency could be said about me. Now, my tax exemption, I don't have to pay property tax, has nothing to do with pastor, doesn't have anything to do with the church. It's because it's one of my benefits of being a 100% disabled vet. So I don't have to pay property tax, which is a great thing. Trust me, it's a great thing. It's an absolutely great thing. So I'm here broadcasting from my home. I don't have to pay property tax. Now, some may argue a disabled vet should not even have that tax exempt status. But if disabled vets can have it, and if pastors can have it, if it's a church parsonage, is that somehow wrong? Now, I think where the issue may be, it's not so much about the tax exempt. It may be because, well, they have these mansions that are worth who knows how much. But this article continues to go on. The property tax exemption on church and ministry-owned homes is governed by state laws. It differs from the parsonage housing allowance, which was created by Congress, involves a tax exemption from the federal income tax. Here's a list of the largest parsonages in the United States and how much televangelists and their churches are saving by using the tax exemption. All right, so the first one is David E. Taylor, by purchasing a mansion through his church. So now that this is where it gets kind of weird. So he purchased the mansion, but he does so through his church. So he owns it, but it was done through the church. Televangelist David E. Taylor saves over $150,000 in annual property taxes. Wow. The amount he saves in property taxes could pay off my entire home and then do any major home improvements that we wanted to do and probably buy me a new car. Okay. So for the amount he saves in property taxes, I could pay off my entire home, do any major repairs that we need to do and buy myself a new car. And that is not an exaggeration. All right. In April of 2022, the Kingdom of God Global Church purchased a parsonage for Taylor at the cost of $8.3 $1 million. So the church purchased the parsonage for the pastor. Because the church purchased it, I guess then you can claim it as a parsonage. Therefore, then it gets the tax exemption. So they basically bought it for him. It's labeled a parsonage. Now, what happens if he leaves the church? Is it still called a parsonage? Like, how does that work? That seems a little like I would have to see how you navigate this. But again, we could ask the question, is it wrong for a pastor to own a home that cost $8.3 million? Is it wrong? Now, we could probably find some verses that we could try to use, but I don't think the verses are ever going to clearly articulate exactly how much is too much. And then it's so exactly how do we look at this? What is the right thing? What is the wrong thing? Now, what I'm going to challenge you to do today, I probably should have done this for today's focus, but I just saw this just a little while ago and just immediately ran to the microphone. I think what you should do is I want you to make if you want to participate. It's what I do for this podcast is I try to get you to participate, not just be a passive listener. Today, grab a piece of paper and a Bible and just try to come up with as many verses as you can come up with that would seem to offer some kind of guideline of exactly what can a pastor, is there any limit to what the amount a home can be worth for a pastor? In other words, does the Bible articulate any principles, hard and fast principles that say, hey, a pastor should not have a home that cost $8.3 million, and here's the reason why. But what about 7.3? What about 6.3? What about 5.3? What about 1.3? What about 700,000? What about 500,000? What about 400,000? My home is probably worth about 200,000, maybe a little over 200,000. Now, we did not purchase it for 200,000. It was a new home. The previous family lived in it. I think they lived in it for like maybe 6 months, and then they basically fled town in the middle of the night, and the house was vacant. The housing market had collapsed. The bank took it, put it up for auction. Someone in the church said, hey, we think we've got the perfect house for you. What we wanted to do was simply try to just, appease everyone, because everyone kept telling us we need to get a house. We need to get a house. We lived on base housing. And the military, we didn't want to take on a housing payment. We didn't want to do any of that. And we were trying to hold out until the last day that the military says you can't live on base housing anymore. Because there was a lot of pluses for living in base housing, right? Didn't have to pay for anything. You live in base housing, and if anything broke, you didn't have to pay for it. So it was like, that was the best of both worlds. So we had started looking because we kind of felt that my military career was, coming to a possible conclusion. So we'd gotten approved, for a certain amount. And so someone in the church comes to us and says, hey, there's this house. You should put a bid for it. And we're like, okay, well, we've been approved for whatever it was, like 100,000 or whatever. And we're like, okay, well, we'll put a bid on it. We hadn't even seen the house, ladies and gentlemen. We had not even seen it. We'd not even driven by it. I didn't know anything about it. It was more like, we're just going to do this to appease the people in the church and because you pick and choose your battles, right? So you don't want to offend someone who's out there trying to help you. Or like, okay, there's no way we're going to win the house. So we'll it's like a $200,000 house, $250,000 house. We're like, we'll offer a bid for like $100,000, $110,000, whatever it was. Yeah, almost $100,000 cheaper than what the house was worth. And we'll just do that. So we threw in the bid. I think that was like on a Friday or a Saturday. And then Sunday night after church. So it's a Sunday night after church. They're outside and they're on their laptop or they're on their phone. I can't remember what they were looking at. And they said, hey, come here. We're like, what? You just won the house. And we're like, wait, what? We just won the house? What are you talking about? And then it was like total panic set in, like, no, this is not the way this was supposed to work. What's happening? No. And they're like, and then I'm like, what do I do? We're going to have a house payment. Oh no. What is going on? And we hadn't even seen the house. So like the next day we go to the realtor's office and they're like, so, And they said, you just hit the jackpot with this. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, well, it's already worth far more than you're paying for it. You could flip this. And I'm like, wait, what? And so we're still trying to figure it out. So what do you think of the house? And we look at the realtor and we're like, we haven't seen the house. And she's like, what? No, we've not even seen. You haven't seen it? She's like, well, let's go look at it. So she drove us here and we walked in and we're like, wow, much nicer than anything that we thought we would ever own. So it was amazing the way it worked out, but it's worth $200,000. I can't give a definitive. It's over $200,000 plus. Now, am I in sin? Now you say, well, $200,000. Okay. So where's the dollar amount? See, that's what I want you to really think about. What is the dollar amount? And here's the question. If there's a dollar amount for what kind of house a pastor can live in, then is there a dollar amount for you, the church member? Because one could argue, well, wait, the pastor, he's showing that he's fleshly. He's showing that he's worldly. He's showing that he's just doing this for money, but it could be flipped around. That the church member sitting back there who owns a $500,000 house, a $50,000 car, and a, you know, I don't know how much boats cost, and a boat and a couple of jet skis or whatever the case may be, you could be arguing, well, they're fleshly and worldly because they could have used that wealth to help support the church. So you could flip it around. But David E. Taylor owns a parsonage that cost $8.3 million. Now, before Taylor's church purchased the mansion, the Hillsborough County, Florida property tax on the property was $155,715.20. But after the purchase, the property tax dropped to just $1,404. According to the Hillsborough County's tax assessor website, the minuscule 2023 tax on the property has still not been paid. All right. So there's that one. Then let's go to the next one. The next one is Ron Carpenter. California might not be the most common location for million-dollar parsonage due to the state's inflated real estate prices. California's guide to the state property tax exemptions for religious organizations says parsonages are exempt when the primary residence of clergy, for example, pastor, minister, rabbi, priest, etc., when the use of the property is incidental to and reasonably necessary to accomplish the nonprofit religious organization's exempt purpose, is a $7 million parsonage reasonably necessary? The Inside Edition investigative report includes brief video of televangelist Ron Carpenter's Fremont, California parsonage that is on sale right now for $7,250,000. All right. In 2018, Ronald W. Carpenter Jr. Ministries purchased the 14,000 square foot mansion with an 800 bottle wine closet. Alameda County reports the parsonage was appraised at $7,505,330 before the ministry received the property tax exemption. The ministry paid $83,521 in property tax. The tax bill dropped to $716 for 2023. In 2022, the ministry purchased a second home 14 miles away, which is not tax exempt, for almost $6 million. All right. So they go on and offer some more about that. But is that too extravagant? A 14,000 square foot mansion. Is that too much for a pastor? The next one, if it will load, the next one, slowly but surely it will load. Here we go. The next one is Kenneth Copeland. The famous Word of Faith preacher Kenneth Copeland lives in a parsonage located on prime lakefront real estate north of Fort Worth, Texas. Now, Fort Worth is about, 2 hours from me, maybe, less than that. Maybe about an hour and a half. The mansion is 18,279 square feet. When compared to other luxury homes in Tarrant County, the parsonage appears to be appraised below market value. And there's a picture of it. The thing is gigantic. I mean, man, it is insane. After Tarrant County appraised the parsonage property at 10,825,000 in 2020, Koblenz Church challenged the appraisal, even though the property was tax exempt. The following year, Tarrant County dropped the appraisal valuation by almost 5 million. The property tax exemption parsonage was appraised at $6,016,739 in 23. Tarrant County property tax calculator estimates the property tax would be $106,000 based on 2023 appraisal. The Texas tax code restricts parsonages to 1 acre of land. That's interesting. So the Texas tax code restricts parsonages to 1 acre of land. Therefore, the adjacent plot of land owned by Copeland's Eagle Mountain International Church doesn't receive a parsonage exemption. Instead, the 35.6 acres of property receives an agricultural exemption. For 2023, Copeland's Church owes $37 in property tax for the 35.6 acres of land. So, again, is that too much? Is that too much? I don't know. And then there's you can look at all of these. Next is Jesse DePlantis. In 2015, while preaching at the Southwestern Believers Convention, DePlantis joked about how his parsonage will be destroyed on Judgment Day. God will burn it down. Then DePlantis said, to build that house is $500 a square foot. It's 40,000 square foot. You do the math. 40,000 square foot. DePlantis exaggerated the size of his plantation style home when the parsonage was under construction. The home consists of 22,000 square feet of living space, in addition, 12,000 square feet for accessory areas as outdoor patios and garages. If DePlantis' home wasn't tax exempt and was appraised at $20 million, which is the amount DePlantis says it is worth, the property tax would be approximately $122,000. And they go on and show all of these mansions, how much they're worth. I'm not going to sit there and read all of them. Again, you can look this up. It's called Pastor's Parsonage Exemption. What would televangelists pay if their mansions weren't tax exempt? You should look it up and you can draw your own conclusions. You should draw your own conclusions. And then you can read all of the comments underneath it. I knew someone was going to bring it up. For some reason, Pastor John MacArthur has been left off this list. He is fabulously wealthy with multiple mansions. If you call out one, please be honest and call out all that qualify. All right. I knew someone was going to bring it up, but for some reason, MacArthur sometimes gets left off that list. And you're like, well, and so when they did the report, MacArthur fans were very upset about it. I don't care who they are. I don't care what their theology is. I don't care if it's Reformed, non-Reformed, charismatic, non-charismatic, free will, Arminian, Augustinian. I don't care. I don't care what their theology is. That's not the issue. Don't look at them based off, well, their theology is wrong. We can criticize their wrong theology. We can criticize that all day long, but that's not what we're talking about right now. What we are talking about is simply, in a sense, kind of a mathematics question. How much is too much? Can you have a 24,000 square foot home as a pastor and that be acceptable? Can your home be worth $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million, $22 million, $30 million, $40 million? At what point do you say, now you've entered into sin? The problem is scripture does not give us a dollar amount. It doesn't say thou shalt not own a home for this amount. And if you're going to put that kind of restriction on a pastor, hey, you're a pastor. You can't own a home worth that much. Well, then can you flip it around for church members? Church members pulling up in the church parking lot in a car that's worth $40,000, $50,000? They invite you over to their home for dinner and you're like, this house is worth all of this money. Now, do you criticize them for that and say, well, wait a minute, you could be living in a lot cheaper home and you could be supporting the ministry. Where it's always easy to criticize. It's always, some people could say that I should not be on living in a home for that's $200,000. Some people should be like, well, if you're going to struggle with your mortgage, you should just sell the house and find something smaller and cheaper. Someone can make that argument against me. Some people could make an argument. You should have never had the church pay for your mortgage payment. You should have never done that. You shouldn't have even, the fact that you received $12,000 and for your house payment in a year, that's too much money. You didn't deserve that. I mean, people can make all kinds of accusations. I just don't know where it is. So what I want you to do, don't go looking in books. Don't go listen to pastors. Just you sit down with a Bible and find a list of verses that you think somehow governs what a pastor can or can't have. Now, we do have a famous verse, at least one. I was looking up for a couple, but if you look in Titus chapter 1, it's kind of referring to, elders and kind of some of their qualifications, right? And so it names some of these, but then it goes on and says this. Holding fast the faithful word, this is Titus chapter 1, verse 9, holding fast the faithful word as he hath been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers. For there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision. So they're contrasting. Here's what a pastor should be, an elder should be, an overseer, however we get into the discussions about terminology. But then there's these others. And then look at one of the criticisms it has of them. Verse 11, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. Hey, they're doing it for filthy lucre. They're doing it for financial gain. They're doing it for money. Okay, now it's always easy to say that person's doing it for money. That person's doing it for the love of God and for the love of the word. How do you judge that? You see, that's so subjective because it's very difficult to look inside of someone and going, you're doing it for selfish reasons. Someone could look like they're not doing it for selfish reasons. I always raise this question about the whole concept of love, right? Oh, you're supposed to love people. Well, I love them and I love them. Isn't it interesting? You love the people that you're getting something from. You're getting some kind of emotional support or physical something of course you love them. You're getting something from it. Have that person treat you like dirt. Have that person not give you anything in return. Tell me how much you love them then. Sometimes our love is nothing more than self-love. We say we love them, but we're really loving ourselves because we're benefiting greatly from it. A feeling, an emotion, some kind of satisfaction. Well, oh, of course. Well, it's easy to say, I'm preaching the Bible because I love the Word of God. And I'm going to be here at church on Sunday and I'm going to preach. And then after church, I'm going to go back to my 24,000 foot mansion. I'm going to go back to my home that's worth 8 million, 10 million, 15 million. And I'm going to drive there in my car worth $50,000 or $60,000. As I wear this, $5,000 suit. Now, but at the same time, you could say, hey, if you're a pastor of a church with 10, 15,000 people, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of responsibility. I mean, you're managing something that's gigantic. Well, isn't the worker worthy his hire? And it's too bad. You're a pastor of a little small church in the middle of nowhere. That's on you. If you were a better pastor, you're a better preacher, you're a better teacher, then you could be in front of a church with 500, 1,000 people, and then you wouldn't have to worry about any kind of financial situation because they could pay you more. It's on you. Now, does it make one person more spiritual because they're a pastor of a little small church versus the one who's a pastor of a larger church making good money? I don't think you can say one is more spiritual than the other. I think that's unfair. But at the same time, both could be the pastor of a little small church in the middle of nowhere, someone in a large church. Both could be motivated more by money, more by their financial stability than they want to admit. That's always the problem, right? If you're a pastor, that's always the problem, because if your livelihood, your mortgage, your house payment is connected to your work as a pastor, then that's where it always blurs. The lines get blurred because you're like, oh, I know I should do this, but I can't say this and I can't do that and I can't do this because I've got to keep my job because I got to pay the bills. I can't, because if you didn't have to pay the bills, you probably could come into the pulpit sometimes with, you know, ready to go. You could just say whatever with or without offense to friend or foe. You don't care, because what are you going to do? You can't hold anything over my head. You don't pay me. You can't give me a dime. Come on, say something to me. You could probably approach it differently, but when you're like, I got a mortgage payment due in a couple of weeks. Okay. Hey guys, how's everyone doing? Hey, you're great people. You're wonderful. Hey, oh, how are the kids? How are your grandparents? Oh, are you taking that trip to wherever? Oh, how are, and you gotta appease people. Once money gets involved, everything gets weird. Everything gets weird. So what do you think? They want to make it about the tax exemption. They want to make it about a tax exemption. There are tax exemptions for all kinds of things. So I don't think we should say, hey, they should lose their tax exemption. I don't think that's necessarily fair, right? Because should disabled veterans lose their tax exemption? You would have to look at every tax exemption and go, well, is that fair? Now, should a parsonage be tax exempt until it's worth that it's worth $1 million or $2 million, and then you now lose the tax exemption? I guess you could have that argument. Scripture, you could argue, is a tax exemption for ministry, is that even a biblical thing? Some people would argue that it's not a biblical thing, that it's a negative thing. Some people say that if you're tax exempt, then that allows the government to control you. That's always kind of a conspiratorial way of thinking. I've had people contact, is your church 501c3? Well, yes. Well, then we can't attend your church because your church is beholden to the government. You allow the government to tell you what to do. The government's never shown up in my door ever to tell me what I can and cannot preach. Now, if you're telling me I can't get involved in politics, well, I know this is going to come as a shock. But whether I'm tax exempt or not tax exempt, I'm a church. I'm not a political party. So I'm not getting involved in your political back and forths. Okay. But for the most part, I think there's people who have some issues with that, but you can debate that. What I want to really do is just like, where's the line? This is kind of like the regulative normative principle debate, right? What can you do in a church? What can you not do in a church? Do you have to have a clear command in scripture to do it? And if you don't have a clear command, a clear example, you don't do it? Or can you do anything other than that which is specifically condemned? If it's not specifically condemned, you can do it. You don't need a command. You don't need an example. It's a free-for-all unless you can say that you're violating something clearly in scripture. There's the regulative normative principle. When it comes to how expensive of a home can a pastor own before he enters into sin? I think everyone has strong opinions. I grew up in a little small town in the middle of nowhere, Texas. And I know that if a pastor was driving a nice car, like he got a new car, you'd be like, oh, look at that. Look at him driving around in that nice, you know, whatever kind of car it was, or that nice truck. Look at that. Must be nice taking all that money from hardworking people out there working on the ranch, working on the farm. They're working in the factory and they keep giving that money, passing. That's why they pass that, that's why they pass the offering plate, so that pastor could have that nice truck. And there'd be a lot of jealousy and a lot of, and so then you'd be like, well, man, what should a pastor drive then? Now, Do you base it on how people are going to think? At the same time, you don't want to create a stumbling block, right? You don't want to create a stumbling block. So where is that line? And I don't know if anyone clearly has it. In some cases, pastors are like, hey, the worker is worthy of his hire. You can say whatever you want, but at the same time, do you not worry about what people think? The reason Inside Edition did that report is because they know when people see these pastors in these mega mansions, those people have some negative feelings. They have it makes them have negative feelings, not just for the televangelist. It makes them have negative feelings for the local church. And they see that as all it is about making money. All it is about bringing in money. And why do you bring in money? So that you can pay that pastor, so he can have his $200,000 home or $300,000 or $400,000. And you have to be honest. That's always the thing about the church structure. If the church, it has to bring in money, not only to maintain the church, they also have to bring in money to maintain the pastor. He's got to get paid. And so then that's more money that has to come in. And that's not money going directly to ministry. That's money going maybe directly for the pastor to be able to pay his bills, his electricity, his heat, his car payment, medical bills, whatever. And you say, well, that's directly related to the ministry. Well, it can be, but when you start looking at it, it's like, how much all of the money coming in, how much of it goes to all of these other things, and what are you actually getting from it? We're right back to that question. Some of these televangelists, if the church paid, you know, $8.3 million for that home, how much spiritual content is that pastor producing to come anywhere close to worth $8.3 million or $20 million or $30 million? In many cases, they preach one sermon on a Sunday, or they may preach the same sermon multiple times for the multiple services, but it's only one sermon that's going to get uploaded. In many cases, sometimes all they put out, and maybe they'll do a weekly show. In many cases, it's just their sermon edited down into smaller segments to air. I don't have any good answers, but it's an interesting discussion to kick off this Thursday, March the 14th, 2024. So what's your thoughts? Pastors and their multi-million dollar mansions, should they be tax exempt? You can weigh in on that. And what's reasonable? When does it become not reasonable? And whatever rule, and I want you to look in scripture and try to come up with all the scriptures you think that should govern this, that should regulate this, right? I want you to make a list of scriptures, but just ask yourself, whatever rule you impose on pastors and what they can or cannot own, then what would be a like principle, a comparable principle for those who are sitting in the pew? And then we all get very uncomfortable. Email me, newsif@yahoo.com, newsif@yahoo.com. That's newsif@yahoo.com. newsif@yahoo.com. Please note, if you look up that article, I don't know which page it's on, because there's multiple pages to it. One of those pages actually has embedded, I think, the YouTube video from Inside Edition. And so you can go watch the YouTube video, see the drone footage of these mansions. Just make sure whatever criticism you offer the mansions, and I have to do this as well, let's not do it because of covetousness or jealousy, right? I can look at some of that going, for crying out loud, I just need to pay off my mortgage, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I need. I just need, you know, $70,000 and $80,000. That's all I need. That's all I need. I don't need $8.3 million, $5 million, $4 million, $3 million, $1,500,000, $400,000, $300,000, $200,000. I don't even need $100,000. I just need between $70,000 and $80,000. I'd have to look up the exact amount, and then I could pay off the mortgage and be done. So I could look at that and I could do so, and I could act like righteous indignation, and it could just be covetousness and jealousy. So if you do look at it, just monitor yourself that you're not condemning it out of covetousness or jealousy, and that we can actually formulate what would be the biblical principles to regulate, to govern the you know, how expensive a home a pastor can live in, but at the same time, corresponding to that, correlating, relating to, what is the rule for the what a person sitting in the pew should be able to own? At what point do we cross some kind of line? Thanks for listening. Everyone have a great day. God bless.